head to amrap.org.au.
Hey, what's up, everybody? My name is Kate, and you're listening to This Australian Life around Australia on the Community Radio Network from the studios of Joy 94.9. You're probably used to hearing Lisa with Word for Word each week, which is on a break from production at the moment, but I hope that you stay tuned as I chat with people around Australia on who they are and where they are in 2020. This week, I'm going to talk with Heaney. They go by they, them, and we talk about some of the things that I think have plagued a lot of us. What it's like when a parent gets divorced. What it's like when you lose faith, the faith that you grew up with. And most importantly, I think we get into the heart of what it means to really have empathy for somebody. I know for myself in particular right now, things can seem a little bit hectic. With COVID, we don't know what's going to happen next week. And myself being an American, looking at the elections in the United States, I don't know what country I might go home to one day. But the truth of the matter is that when we retain that ability to look at somebody else, to know that we're the same as them deep down, it helps us to, I think, have a little bit more love in the world. To see each other as someone that we can help rather than hurt. So I hope you enjoy our episode today. I have to say, it is an amazing one. Heaney's story is nothing short of astounding to me. How they go from having a near-death experience when their brother is almost hit by, well, I'll just let you hear the rest. Today I'm talking with Heaney. Heaney has, they're awesome.
So I'm sitting in my bedroom, and when I moved in, I chose this bedroom because I could kind of look across the road and see some really large trees that are growing in the reservoir just behind the row of houses in front of me. It kind of makes me feel like I'm not surrounded in like a suburb. Even just knowing that there's a large body of water just under the ground, just meters away from me, makes me feel comfortable. My bedroom's pretty simple. It's a bit zen-like. I've got a lot of black and white art on my walls. Yes, I specifically color-themed it to be simple. It feels very cozy. I like to keep it warm and kind of warm light.
I'll pause here to give Heaney a better introduction. They go by they, them. They are 39 years old, but I swear, do not look it, and is an artist. They run live drawing events all over Melbourne, and they manage a tea room in the city.
It feels very cozy. I like to keep it warm and kind of warm light.
I like the sound of Heaney's voice as they talk about their room. It's like when they describe how comfortable it is, it's like their voice actually... they get more comfortable.
I like to kind of, I'm a bit of a creature of comfort. Like, I like to have a warm space around me.
Have you always been like that as a kid? Were you really big on, like, creature comforts?
Yeah, I think even when I was sharing a bedroom with my four siblings, like, I'd put little bedside table decorations beside my bed. Like, I'd pull off acorns and leaves from a tree and have that kind of... displayed on my bedside table, which was probably just like a wooden pallet box or something. Like, I think I've always kind of just been away in a bit of a dreamland.
I think that's a funny thing to say, because to me, at least, taking the time to decorate your space, it seems really present and grounded.
Not necessarily avoiding reality, but...
but avoiding reality.
Just a creative soul, you know, just kind of... beautifying and, yeah, making things look good.
Did your siblings, did they notice it at all? Were they like, oh my God, there's Heaney with...
Yep, that was me. I was always kind of like the arty one. Did like to rearrange the whole house. Maybe it was just like the dominant Leo trait coming out.
Yeah, that was probably it. Or maybe, just maybe, it was you know, their way of controlling things.
I mean, I don't want to think it's anything particularly special about or unique about our family or how we grew up.
Hina goes on to tell me a little bit about their siblings. And they say at one point that their siblings, they just, they've always seemed to have things a bit more together than they have.
Can you think of an example where it was apparent that they had really figured life out and you were not getting there?
Probably when my parents got divorced, I left religion and went haywire, and my brother buried himself in goals and achieving things. And while I was out discovering the wonderful world of sex, drugs and rock and roll, he was winning the ducks of high school. I don't know if I could have gotten any that black sheep in the family. I don't know if that shade of black could have gotten any darker at the time.
I love the way that Heaney decides to describe this idea of being the black sheep of a family, how that's also sort of, it's denoting this darkness within.
Was that something you were conscious of as a kid, that you wanted to stand out from your family?
No, I definitely didn't want to stand out. I think I just wanted to kind of drift off into the background. I was always a bit of a fairy, quite happy in my own little world. And I was a middle child, so I don't think I was ever seeking or looking to be like a leader or known for something or stand out.
Were you kind of like the peacemaker, being in the middle? Like you said, you just sort of wanted everything to be, maybe I'm misinterpreting this, but you wanted everything to be kind of like chill so you could just do your thing, right?
Yeah. I needed my creative safe space. Definitely aware of like other dynamics going on in the family. Some of them I wasn't happy with.
Yeah, I love this. In my head, I see this picture of Heaney as a child arranging the house physically to look the way that they want. But at the same time, they're astute and also emotionally almost arranging the house, the dynamics, to be what they want as well.
Just felt like my role there was to kind of facilitate whatever they were going through. But I never really felt like I brought any of my own drama. But I was pretty happy with that.
So this might sound a bit brutal as I'm saying it, but just two themes that I'm noticing: silently judging and also not sharing any of your own stuff. So keeping people at a distance.
Kind of want more than that. Like I knew that just kind of hearing my siblings and my parents' problems was enough.
What was it like living in the same room with your three siblings? Like, I'm an only child, so to me that sounds quite hectic.
It was pretty hectic. Like, that's just, you know, that is just all we knew. There was a bunk bed and there was a single bed, and me and my brother top and tailed for a couple of years. I think I was about 5 and he was 2. And I was so pissed off about having to share a bed with him, and so jealous of my siblings and their bunk bed, like 80 centimeters away, having their own bed, having people around and having people in my personal space, to me was naturally a comfortable space to be. I felt kind of protected by that.
So being surrounded by people, that's a comfortable space for Heaney. And I find it really interesting that later on in the interview, we'll find out that Heaney was in a long-term relationship with somebody who's quite the exact opposite, who when there were too many people around, they ended up retreating to their own space. So that's interesting. 2, we're going to learn a really amazing story about Heaney's brother, what happened to him, and how that shaped the entire dynamic of their family. And then we're also going to learn, you might have been really astute and picked up at one point, Heaney talked about leaving religion, and you'll find out what that religion is, why it's so important. Stay tuned. Hey, everybody. My name is Kate, and you're listening to This Australian Life on Joy 94.9. Really excited to talk with Heaney today. Just their life story completely on the table. You get to listen. Right now, we're at the point where Heaney is just describing their childhood.
Oh, my gosh. So you slept in the same bed as a sibling. That's so interesting.
Constantly kicking each other's feet.
I just think it's interesting because I wonder, like, if someone's in a bad mood or something like that, did you feel like you sort of took that on because you're all in the same space? Or was it kind of a thing where you got really strong in what you were going through and you sort of learned how to phase other people out?
I think because I was a bit of a fairy and not kind of maybe present, but maybe that was just my coping mechanism to kind of deal with having all that energy in your personal space. There was definitely moments when I was, you know, not happy about the little golden child of the family and sharing a bed with them and just wanting them to be out of my space.
Yep, you could have probably guessed it. Here comes the awesome story.
So I'm pretty special from a young age, so made Dan special. As a child, when he was 2 years old, he was hit by a train and survived. One morning, we're all getting ready to go to school. Mum left a pram in the driveway, ducked inside for like 2 seconds to grab something from the kitchen. She came back out, he'd managed to jump out of the pram, run across onto the train tracks, and he was standing there in the level crossing, just like a couple hundred metres up the road, hand started ringing. And I just remember this panic moment of watching Mum run out from the kitchen and not even kind of realising that Dan had gotten to where he was. And I kind of came out, saw what was happening, and just stood in shock with the rest of my siblings and watched as my mum tried to wave this train down. The train slammed their brakes on, but the engine of the train went over him a matter of metres, like 2 to 5 metres, and then came to a stop. And when it had stopped, I could still hear him kind of crying. So I tried to get him out. I couldn't get him out. So they reversed the carriage and pulled him back in. And I just remember running to my bedroom just before the impact and just burying my head in the pillow because I just thought that, you know, he had been killed. And then when I went into the living room, engineers from the train kind of were carrying my brother with like some blood everywhere, and there was this gash on his leg, and I just so vividly remember like his fat bubbles coming out of his leg, like from this huge gash. It was real creepy. And, you know, he got on the news that night, and there was so much hoo-ha going on around that at the time, and that was like a really huge moment for our family. We were able to get through, and he survived, and all he got was a broken leg, and it was pretty miraculous. And I think from that, we all kind of knew that he obviously had a purpose or a reason to be alive. Not to dismiss that anybody else doesn't have a purpose, but, you know, to kind of survive something so miraculously at that age. Yeah, he kind of took it on board. He was obsessed with trains, since then. Quite hilarious. He would make us dance around the living room, acting like Thomas the Tank Engine. You know, you do with the arms and you do the locomotion. So when Thomas the Tank Engine came on TV, he'd make us get up and dance around the living room in a circle and be trained.
Oh, my God. It's so funny. Like, I can't even imagine what it's like to be a parent and to see your kid wanting to sort of relive that moment that probably was the worst moment in your life.
You could kind of see the way that my dad reacted to him was a little bit more favourable than the rest, I think, because he kind of replicated what my father was a lot. But they were two peas in a pod.
So what are your parents like? You said your dad's an engineer. Sounds like he's quite straightforward. What's your mom like?
Hey, everybody. My name is Kate. And if you're just joining us, you're on Joy 94.9. And this is This Australian Life, where we talk to people about their life stories, everything that's going on with them. A few things about Heaney, just in case you're interested in knowing. They go by they, them. They are the manager of a tea room in Melbourne. They're also an artist. They help run live drawing events. And also, they're just really cool. We've just talked a little bit about how their brother was struck by a train and ended up changing their entire life, maybe in subtle ways that we don't even know. But we're also about to talk about Heaney's parents. And I think it's really important to note something which I didn't actually find out till the end of the interview, but I'm going to tell you because I think it's very important for the context. And that's that Heaney's family, they are you ready? They're Mormon. And I think knowing that really changes the story that we hear.
So what are your parents like? You said your dad's an engineer. Sounds like he's quite straightforward. What's your mom like?
Unconditional love is probably the best way I can describe my mum. She's had like her troubles and her issues, like growing up and a little bit of depression, I think. You know, she was just a classic mum. Your friends would come around, she'd try and feed them too much. They'd say they're full, and she's like, no, I'm sure you can fit something else in. She was overly nice to the point of, like, going eye roll I feel sick. Okay, your mum's too much. And she was the verbal diarrhea queen. Like, we would go into town and she would make best friends with anyone that she could tell her life story to, and would come back and there she'd be with like a group of people or one person, and they were just going for it. You know, it's just like, wah, 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 wah. And just like, yep, mum's at it again. But, you know, I think they were just like looking for a connection, and probably she was probably sick of talking to children all day when it's adult time. But she was a very open soul. I always kind of sensed a lot of sadness around her as a child, which I'm not really kind of aware of until I did a bit of work later on, but I think it made me not necessarily resentful towards her, but just I think I wanted to kind of get away because I could feel her depression and her sadness.
Yo, so this really reminds me of this quote by Carl Jung, who you might have heard of. He sort of like is a big deal in psychology. He founded analytical psychology. But, you know, point being, he had this quote and it reminds me of what Heaney was saying. But he says, nothing is a stronger influence psychologically on their environment and especially on their children than the unlived life of the parent. So I'm just going to say that again. Nothing has a stronger influence psychologically than the unlived life of the parent.
Was it ever to the point where it was uncomfortable? Like you would be like, just sit down, like, or, yeah.
All of my siblings are just like, no, I'm just shut up, you know, stop slathering us in praise, okay? We get it. Like I'd bring home like a report card from school and it said I did something well, and she'd just like blow it up into like, oh my God, I just won a Nobel Peace Prize. And it's like, oh, suffocating. Okay, that's enough.
Yeah, it's like you don't want like the same tone, like you don't want the same volume all the time for everything. Like it seems unnatural.
100%.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. I kind of have only just realized this recently, but yeah, the authenticity of her tone, like I didn't quite trust because it was always kind of the same tone. And I think that just kind of made me realize, you know, she was suffering from depression at the time, or she was carrying a sadness, and that's the only way that she knew how to at the time.
I don't know. Maybe it's me, but I find almost like Heaney's description for themselves almost applies really well to their mom also, someone who's disconnected from reality and somebody who isn't sharing about themselves.
Yeah, I guess the big question would be, was there ever a time that she let this drop?
Not necessarily. I've never seen it drop into happiness, joy a couple of times. But a lot of time I just, like, with my mom, I just remember just a lot of sadness.
How did your dad react to your mom being this happy all the time, or this, you know, upbeat? Like, would he roll his eyes, or was it something he
loved
about
her? Like, yeah. He lapped it up, like, because he kind of came from, you know, he didn't come from that. But to have someone just slathering him in praise all the time, it's just like, yeah. But in saying that, when they had their troubles and they were fighting, the garden was immaculate, you know? He had his happy face.
What did they fight about?
It was never really done in public. It was always kind of behind closed doors. And I think that just kind of speaks volumes about the religion that I grew up in, you know, or just the kind of construct that I grew up in. But I think it was to do with whatever was happening in their relationship, and things would just go quiet and we didn't know really what was going on, but we didn't ask. Yeah, we felt a bit powerless at the time. Like, we couldn't really do anything, just let it pass.
So they weren't coming to you kids. Like, sometimes in divorces, I feel like people go to the kids for some sort of validation. They didn't do that at all.
Yeah, unfortunately, they did. And it really sucked. But I guess I'm not alone in that. I definitely had both my parents kind of say and, you know, digress on what was going on at times. And a lot of times I didn't want that information. I didn't feel like it was, I knew it wasn't my responsibility to carry that information, but you can't not carry it when your parent is hurting and you're told certain things and you don't know what to do with that information, but you just have to sit with it and hearing it, you're helping them carry it. But yeah, it was pretty uncomfortable for a few years while they were kind of going through that.
Did you feel like your parents did that with all your siblings, or were you in particular maybe targeted? Because as you said, you're sort of like a bit more quiet, or maybe just you were okay with listening.
So I want to try and make myself self-important, but I did feel like I was the only one who was like around and there and willing to listen.
So obviously it sounds like you guys weren't talking about it at the time. I would assume you weren't talking about the fact that your parents were telling you this stuff with anyone else either.
No.
I guess, do you want to share at all what they were telling you, or is that quite private, which is totally fine?
Yeah, I was trying to think whether it's like important or not, but I will tell it just because I kind of feel like it's nice to get off my chest. But my mum went back to Scotland when I think I was about 10 years old, and whatever happened on her trip, I think she reconnected with an old flame, and I think that something in her just kind of smelt freedom and excitement and, you know, the life she had before, you know, she kind of got shacked up with these four kids. And when she came back, the relationship with Dad just had changed. I think it was starting to change before she went anyway. But when she came back, it wasn't too long after that. Actually, I think I would have been more like 14 years old or 15 years old. Yeah. And when she came back, things with Dad just, it had changed at that point. And I remember my dad telling me he was driving me somewhere. I think I was taking a job application to the supermarket. And he was just like, oh, your mum told me she's had feelings for someone else. And I don't know how to process that. And I was just like, fuck you. Why are you telling me this? Like, what has that got to do with me? And I'm about to embark on my life, and how dare you put this on me? But it broke my heart. And, of course, I was angry, but it's only kind of taken me, well, it's not only taken me, it's taken me a long time to kind of understand that that just happens with humans, and humans get married, and they... not necessarily that they marry the wrong person, but they just grow and they develop. And sometimes that means the dissolving of a marriage.
Yeah. And while I reckon it was the dissolving of a marriage, I feel like it was almost the dissolving of Heaney's relationship with their dad as well. Because as soon as a parent talks to you that way, I feel like you stop becoming their kid and you become something else. So on that note, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back. You don't want to miss anything, I promise. Sup, sup. My name is Kate, and you're listening to This Australian Life. Man, that was tough for me to get out. Anyway, we're talking with Heaney about their life. It's been fascinating. Heaney grew up Mormon. The secret is out. And we're hearing about the divorce of their parents. And we're going to hear later on about Heaney's relationships.
Happens with humans, and humans get married, and they... not necessarily that they marry the wrong person, but they just grow and they develop. And sometimes that means the dissolving of a marriage. But at the time, it just stabbed me in the heart. And when I had been kind of raised to believe in this construct that families are forever, that really hurt. And then to kind of see my mum kind of go through that as well, and kind of lose their faith, because I guess the religion side of our lives wasn't really helping them get through this. That completely demolished, I guess, my belief in the family unit as well. And it's something I'm still kind of working towards healing at the moment.
Like, did you have any idea that divorce was even an option for them?
Not really, no. No, I think Dad was a bishop at the time. So there was like a bit of social pressure to be perfect.
So I don't know if this is super helpful, but I thought it might be interesting just to look at a bit of the research about Mormons. The religion. And the Pew Research Center, they're like a nonpartisan research organization, so they're not affiliated with any political group. They did some research about Mormons, And just so you know, 4 out of 5 Mormons they found are married to another Mormon. So religion, the same religion, is pretty important. And also they asked Mormons, they asked them how important being a good parent is. And 4 out of 5 Mormons said being a good parent is the most important goal in their life. Only 50% of the general population, just kind of funny, said that. And then nearly 3 out of 4 Mormons said they believe having a successful marriage is also one of the most important things in life. And that's compared to the 34% of the general public. So, you know, I didn't go in depth with Heaney about how important family is to Mormons, but if you want to just go off of this research, it's kind of the foundation of their religion.
So was that was a big turning point for you? Excuse me.
Yeah. I think it definitely was. It just threw everything that I believed in into question. And everything just kind of became a little bit artificial and fake and not really knowing what to trust, what to believe in anymore. Everything about the religion started growing cracks. And I guess it's good that I started questioning everything. I mean, it's quite natural for a teenager to start doing that, impounded by, you know, having this kind of looming divorce in the background kind of just gave me an out to...
So switching gears, this is always interesting to do. So just talking about sort of the nuts and bolts of your life, you went to school. How did you do in school?
I wanted to do well. I wanted to please my parents. I wanted to please my God and do the best that I could. So I always found myself in positions of leadership with my peers when I was younger, at school and in church. And then when I got to high school, like I was often questioning, like, oh, why am I not a leader anymore? Like, this is weird. I still want to be a leader. Why am I not being given leadership positions anymore? And I still did pretty well. Like, I still, you know, got a few awards at the end of the year for being the top of this and the top of that.
Can you talk about being a leader? Is that something you see yourself as today?
Not willingly. Because the idea of responsibility just freaks me out. If it's needed of me, I'll step up to the plate. But, yeah, I think I'm just trying to dissolve my pride a little bit to go, is this actually needed or am I just being a dominant, annoying person?
So you've had problems with that?
Yeah. I definitely felt like I was a bit of a dominant in my first long-term relationship. Definitely the pants wearer.
Okay, I mean, I'd be a bad interviewer if I didn't ask for you to tell me more about that.
Sure. how about 25? I was 26 and I had just met this amazing human, David. I was living back in my hometown in Hamilton, and at that point I decided to move to Australia. And we just met online and it was hilarious. So we were chatting for like quite a few weeks until we realized that we actually served on the school council together when we were 12 years old. And so there was this really warm kind of familiarity about them. They're very talented and very creative, very well spoken and well written. They're an amazing poet. And I, you know, we quickly just bonded and fell head over heels in love with each other. But I kind of didn't want to surrender myself to a relationship when I just decided to move overseas. So I was like, no, we're going to make this work. So we ended up doing long distance for 2 years while I was in Melbourne. And he was still in New Zealand and had just started studying journalism at the time. And After about a year, I moved back. To be with them, which we tried to play it pretty safe. Like, we didn't move in straight away, and then we got our own place. But as soon as I moved in with him, you know, I kind of realised the reality of living with just one other person when that other person isn't as sociable or talkative as you. That can feel really isolating.
Yeah, and I brought this up earlier, this idea that he was used to being surrounded by people growing up. So then all of a sudden to have somebody who doesn't feel that comfortable being in that space, it was confronting for them.
And so I think that fear just kind of came out in control. And I just beautified the house and had project after project around, you know, decorating or doing this, that and the other, founding one business after the other. I just found myself kind of compulsively trying to fill the sadness that I was kind of feeling. I couldn't quite figure out why it wasn't working. And I've put in so much effort, like we've done 2 years long distance.
And I think this is interesting too, not to keep interrupting, but before, if you were listening, Heaney said that their dad, when there were troubles in his relationship, he kept the garden immaculate. And perhaps he can see something similar in Heaney as well.
And then to be there and in that first 6 months go, fuck, is this what I have invested in so much? So, yeah, I was definitely a dog with a bone. So I guess I was just that classic girlfriend that would always do the talking, always do the deciding on what we were going to do. I would plan all of our trips. I would write our shopping list. And often I just felt like they were just coming along for a ride. And it felt lonely, but at the same time, I kind of got off on having the control. Like it gave me a bit of safety because I knew what was happening.
It's funny, like, just hearing this, Heaney liked the control, but they also hated having the control. It kind of reminds me with dogs, you know, like dogs, they're used to having an alpha, right? So if you don't set really strict boundaries with dogs, I believe, they get sort of upset, right? Because they're like, am I the alpha? Am I not? Like, they just want rules and they want to stick to them.
Yeah, it got a bit tiring after a while.
You talked about how it was lonely or isolating living with someone who wasn't as social as you. So can you describe that a little bit more?
So I lived in this really beautiful one-bedroom little studio kind of half house. And it was stunning, and I was just gagging to have people around for parties all the time. And, you know, the first couple of times we had friends around, I just kind of watched them just go into their computer or start reading a book. We've got friends in the living room, and I'm just like, what are you doing? And they would just shut down. And at times they tried, and they tried to be social, but it kind of got to a point where we're living together. Friends would come around, they'd just go into their bedroom and just remove themselves from where they weren't comfortable. And a lot of my friends were just felt really uncomfortable, like they were made to feel like they were invading in their space.
Yeah, like did you, I guess you did. So you'd say something to them, you'd be like, yo, like what, you can't just do that or something.
I felt like the communication for me was really stifled, so I just internalized a lot of my anger. Yeah. It was an interesting relationship. Like, we didn't really kind of, like, argue a huge amount.
Who's that?
Training matches, should I say. It was all kind of more passive-aggressive, quiet undertone fighting.
Did you feel like one person sort of led that style? Like, was one person kind of like, we're not going to fight, that kind of thing? Like, sort of an unsaid thing? Like, would you want to talk about it? Or would they want to talk about it? But like,
I would always want to talk about it. I was the verbal diarrhea, like talk about this, but I could just see how hard it was for them to talk about it. And I just felt like I was torturing them by even bringing it up. could see that they really struggled to verbalise things. They were better at writing. They were really good at writing. So, you know, I suggested, why don't you write it down? And I think, you know, they have their skills of expressing things. But, yeah, poor thing. I was constantly trying to seek validation of anything from them, and they were just kind of unable to verbalise a lot of it.
I wonder, like, you know, why would someone stay in this relationship, right? It's like both of them aren't getting what they want. But then I wonder if not getting what they want is actually what they want.
You talk about this idea that you'd committed already to two years, right, in the relationship, and then you moved over there and you committed a significant amount and sort of were unwilling to change based on the commitment that you'd already given. Is there other things in your life you feel like you've done that where you're just a bit stubborn about not giving up?
Hold that thought. We're going to be right back real soon. You're listening to This Australian Life on Joy 94.9, and we're talking with Heaney, hearing their life story. What's going on? My name is Kate, and you're listening to This Australian Life on Joy 94.9, and we're talking with Heaney. Heaney goes by they, them. They're 39 years old, and they grew up Mormon, which is just, like, one, so cool. Also, we'll get more into that. We're going to talk about, you know, like, the Mormon religion. Who doesn't want to know everything about such a fascinating thing? Yeah, that's it. Enjoy.
You talk about this idea that you'd committed already to two years, right, in the relationship, and then you moved over there and you committed a significant amount and sort of were unwilling to change based on the commitment that you'd already given. Is there other things in your life you feel like you've done that where you're just a bit stubborn about not giving up?
So I studied fashion design in Auckland, and always kind of just assumed that I was going to start a fashion label, despite the fact that every 5 minutes the school would have somebody coming from industry to tell us that we were idiots if we wanted to start our own label because there's no room for new designers. So there's 65 of us graduated from design school, and there were two design jobs. So maybe that stubbornness just kind of came across as, here's all this adversity. Now you've just, like, spent $30,000 on a degree and you're, like, you're so invested and you're just fucking pounding the pavement just trying to make it work and holding on to it.
Sorry, we're going to jump around a little bit here. So before we get into the Mormonism thing, we'll get to the end of Heaney's relationship with David. Heaney had moved to Melbourne. They were really excited. They're working as a graphic designer, but there was something about the relationship. It just wasn't working.
For whatever reason, they just couldn't shake, you know, it was kind of the sadness. And that was just making me feel isolated. And I was getting out there and I was doing a lot of creative projects with a lot of other people. And it was just, yeah, it was just sad. Like, there was just nothing I could do to help shake them out of their headspace. Yeah, so it was so hard. And I guess a funny part of the story is that I actually Googled, how do you break up with a long-term partner? And I was like, I just need something to tell me what to do. I don't know how to do this.
Wait, why didn't you ask, like, a friend or something?
Oh, I had spoken to all of my friends, but it was almost like I needed, and I'd spoken to counsellors, it was like I needed something so sterile, so emotionless.
You're like, I don't trust you, I need Google.
I was like, I just need a written structure to follow.
Oh my God.
And I think I followed, like, one suggestion. It was like, plan a nice dinner and then give yourself some safe. So I cooked them a lovely dinner. And, I remember sitting in that, you know, sterile, it was just like beautiful white zen living room that I kind of put together with glue trimmings, and it was middle of summer and we had the aircon blasting and we'd finished our dinner and I had to sit there and say, I don't think this is working. I don't think I'm in love with you, and we had to part ways. I just felt like the bad person. But I had to remind myself that, you know, like I could have been doing them a favour by setting them free. Yeah.
What did they say?
They weren't very happy about it. And they kind of begged to not end it and that we can try harder. And once I was, try a couple counselling long enough and that's not working. I think, you know, we're flogging a dead horse here. And I mean, they were saying that they felt powerless because, again, like I was the dominant who had the last say in everything. But I was kind of like at my wit's end and I didn't have anything else to give. And in my head, I had to take the approach that I was setting them free. It was fucking hard. I could still hear them crying as they drove off on their motorbike. The sound of their crying was louder than the motorbike.
Shut up.
A lot of people laugh when I tell them that part. That's a really weird sound.
So eventually we stopped laughing about that, which is still so funny to me. We ended up talking about how Heaney came out, how they slept with one of their roommate's girlfriends, which didn't end up well, as it never does. And eventually, we got to this point where Heaney was talking about, you know, being queer and how that conflicted with their religion. And, you know, well, yeah, you'll hear for yourself.
Scary enough, let alone being in the queer community. It's just like it was a double whammy. It's like, fuck. And at the same time, I had, you know, the religious brain going, this is so evil, you know, how you're going to hell, all that fun stuff.
Yeah, so you said your dad was a bishop? So is it a Catholic church? Is that right?
Mormon church.
I didn't know that. Oh, my God. I should be asking you all these questions. Tell me all about this. What have you done?
I was raised in a very happy Mormon household.
Your mom makes so much more sense now. He was like, this is great.
Yeah, and I just say this, like, I am by no means an expert on Mormonism. You know, I have seen Big Love, which is a great show, highly recommend. But I do know, for instance, that, like, women are not allowed to hold positions of authority in the church, right? And it's like, I looked up, you know, for this episode, this dude, he was talking about what it was like to be a woman in the church and in marriage. And this dude in 1852, when writing about marriage, said, a woman should not marry a man in the Mormon church unless she had fully resolved herself to submit herself wholly to his counsel and let him govern as the head. Do you know what I mean? So it's like women were not there to be the main dish. They're kind of the accessory to support the main dish.
God, so did they wear the underpants?
The garments? Yep, totally. All of that and a bag of chips.
Did you do all the secret rituals?
Yes, I did all the secret rituals. I left religion when I was 18, so there were certain rituals I wasn't able to do after that, but I went and performed temple baptism for dead people when I was 16 or 15 years old, going to the temple, getting into the white robes and going to be baptized by proxy for people was part of my childhood, like part of my youth. That was kind of, I feel like I describe a science fiction movie when I talk about the experience of doing that. It was a bit of a trip when I think back.
Yeah, so just in case you're not aware, something that the Mormons do that Heaney is referring to I hope it's not rude. I just find it really funny. They baptize you, whether you want to be baptized or not, but I believe only once you're dead, right? Which says volumes, I would say. Some people, like, you might be going, oh my God, just get back to the interview. But no. So some people that they did it for, like an example, would be like the day after Senator Barack Obama became the presidential nomination for the Democratic Party, like a Mormon posthumously baptized his mom, who had died, into the Mormon faith. So it's like they hadn't done it before, but because he was a Democratic nominee, they're like, got to get him on the side. Steve Irwin has been baptized in the Mormon faith. Elvis Presley, like, the list goes on. Oh my God, they've even done Adolf Hitler. Like, it's a weird thing.
But how kind of fucked up it was
that you were baptizing dead people.
Yeah. Kind of gets really scared that I'm like carrying all of their, you know, their dead energies around with me.
Like they're all pissed that you baptized.
Yeah, like they're all like, how dare you fucking like force your religion on me, and they're all haunting me. Like part of me gets scared that I'm carrying that.
Yes. Do you feel like you still believe that stuff? Like you still carry it around with you? Like you think it's, I don't know.
I don't believe in the doctrine of the faith. There's like good core beliefs that comes with any religion about, you know, just being a good human, treating people with kindness and compassion and love. There's a lot of fucked up doctrine that just seems so, well, how is it even necessary? Like, why is that necessary to baptize somebody for the dead? But yeah, actually going to the temple, getting into your robes and walking into the baptismal font, which, yeah, that's the sci-fi movie part. Like, it's such a beautiful space. The baptismal font is, you know, this large bronze upside-down dome that's sat on the back of 12 brass oxen, life-size oxen. And there's this big mural of Jesus getting baptized by John the Baptist on the wall around you. I don't know if you're familiar with the Gustav Klimt frieze. I can't remember the name of it, but yeah, it's this big kind of palatial cream white coloured room, soft lighting, everything is stunning and beautiful. And you're there in this baptismal font. And I remember my dad doing most of the baptism, but yeah, you kind of go in, they read out the rites, dump you under the water, pull you up, read out the rites, and you'd get baptized maybe like 20 people per session.
Were you proud of your dad?
I was very proud of my dad. I thought my dad was awesome. Like, yeah, I think he's like the fucking coolest. I saw how his role in the church helped him be a better person. But I don't believe in, like, the doctrine of it.
We'll leave it there. Thank you so much for listening. I think, yeah, like, how can you not just be stunned by such a life? How you can know somebody, well, you know who they are, but you don't know a fact like that. Like they grew up to be a Mormon. Also, hashtag, please look up the Mormon baptismal font when you have a chance. It looks awesome. And yeah, I guess I'll just leave you with this idea of what is it in your life that maybe like Heaney. So Heaney had this moment where their parents got divorced and everything they knew sort of crumpled. I wonder, like, was there a moment for you where it's like you realize your parents are just people, you know, like, and how did you deal with that? Heaney talked about how their brother, how he kind of like got serious and really put his energies in a positive way. How did you deal with that moment where maybe you stopped becoming a child and became something else? That's it. I hope you have an awesome day. As always, if you have any comments, feel free to email me at thisaustralianlife@joy.org.au.
ammonia. And every morning we fight so bad. I miss them for the tears they shed. But I'm actually good. Can't help it if we're tilted. I am